Today I am joined by Pascal Lamy, who has been Director General of the World Trade Organization since September 2005 and has recently been appointed for a second term. He began his career in the French civil service at the Inspection Générale des Finances and at the Treasury, and later became advisers to both Finance Minister Jacques Delors and subsequently Prime Minister Pierre Mauroy. From 1985 to 1994, Monsieur Lamy was Chief of Staff for the President of the European Commission, Jacques Delors, and his representative in the G7. Between 1999 and 2004, he was Commissioner for Trade at the European Commission under Romano Prodi. His publications include Towards World Democracy and The Europe We Want. Well, welcome to the University of Warwick, Mr. Lamy. Congratulations on being appointed for a second four-year term and also on receiving your honorary degree here at Warwick. We appreciate very much you taking the time to speak with me today. What does receiving this honorary degree mean to you?
Well, it's an honor. I like academics. I need academics. And the fact that they recognize that I may have a few views, that the sort of interaction between practitioners, and I'm not in an academic position, I'm in an active position, but this notion that we need this two-way street because between people who think, research, and people who are trying to act is something which I value a lot.
Clearly, the main questions affecting the WTO at present are the current global economic situation and the completion of the Doha Round. How would you describe the state of the global economy at the moment, and how important is global trade in the solution?
Well, seen from my trade angle, we obviously are not yet out of the woods. The volume of trade is contracting, shrinking a lot, mainly as a consequence of the contraction of demand, which in turn triggers a contraction of supply, and trade being the transmission belt between demand and supply, trade shrinks. Now, there are a few other factors that may influence the volume of international trade. The drying up of trade finance has marginally hit import-export transactions that could have taken place, but which were constrained by the credit crunch. And then we have this protectionist risk, which hasn't, at this stage, materialized highly. There is no high-intensity protectionist behavior, but governments, as could be expected, are under pressure by some domestic constituencies who are looking for protection. Now, I happen to believe that protecting trade is the worst kind of protection, because at the end of the day, if you start protecting your imports, your neighbor is going to do the same. And it just happens that your neighbor's imports are your exports. So at the end of the day, it leads to a further shrinking of trade and growth. So we have to be very, very, very vigilant on this, which is why the World Trade Organization has stepped in as a sort of a watchdog in making sure that whichever developments happen in trade policies are tracked, made public, and discussed openly between WTO members. So that's one thing. Of course, given where we are in the negotiation of the Doha Round, which is roughly 80% of the job being done, but which also means that 20% remains to be done, this protectionist threat, the best way of addressing it is to conclude the round. And we know where the remaining difficulties are, a bit in agricultural market access for developing countries, a bit in industrial market access for emerging countries, and we obviously have to try and clinch this. For the moment, we have sort of good political signals, notably with the new US administration and the new Indian administration, and those are two big players, but it hasn't yet sort of trickled down in precise negotiating positions. And we need this to happen before we re-put ministers around the table.
Some people argue that the WTO itself is a barrier to a successful conclusion in these trade negotiations. Other aspects of the current governance of global trade that you believe could be reformed to improve the chances of bringing negotiations to an end?
Well, that's an interesting area where the view by academics and the view by practitioners differ. There's a rather widespread view in the academic constituency that you need to reform the governance of WTO. I don't share this view. Not that we do everything right, but the way we take decisions in WTO, which is based on consensus, will not change. There can be interesting academic ideas that, we should move to whichever qualified majority, two-thirds, a double majority. That's all interesting, but it will not happen. Not least because, 153 WTO members are sovereign nation states, and they don't intend to be constrained by tough, hard rules if they haven't agreed to them. And if you look at where we have problems to conclude the round, it's got nothing to do with governance. If US cotton producers resist a reduction of US subsidies to cotton, it's got nothing to do with governance. It's just good old vested interests who resist more trade opening because their own competitive position will be affected either by reduction of tariffs or by reduction of subsidies. So at that stage, it's not a governance problem. No. For the future, whether, for instance, and the Warwick Commission wrote very interesting suggestions on this, whether we should keep in the future this notion that we have a single undertaking and we bundle 20 topics in the same bag, to make the negotiation easier, whether it really makes the negotiation easier, true, is something we will have to consider post-round, moving back, for instance, to sectoral negotiations or moving back to plurilateral agreements instead of multilateral agreements. All things of this kind deserve thinking, but for the moment, the urgency is concluding the round. We will not change the procedures. And by the way, we do not have the sort of geopolitical rebalancing problem which the IMF or the World Bank has. I already have my G30 in the WTO, which is the green room by another name, and you have around the table a fairly representative of today's world. So it's not that, like in the IMF or the World Bank, Belgium has more voting rights than Brazil. We've adjusted to that in the past. We are reasonably flexible, so we don't have this problem. And for a development round, we are not in a position where the governance of WTO would be sort of twisted in favor of developed countries as opposed to the interests of developing countries. The game now is much more complex than that. It's not a north-south problem. Most of the problems we are facing are north-north, south-south, south-north, or north-south. So this sort of big divide isn't there anymore in WTO.
You're obviously a supporter of academic research and its influence on policy making. How important do you think that is?
Well, it's very important if you want to keep the World Trade Organization, the multilateral rules-based system, in tune with the developments of economy, technology, and trade. Take one example, which is obstacles to trade. it's rather obvious that obstacles to trade of the past, like tariffs, are becoming less and less important, but that non-tariff barriers, sanitary, phytosanitary standard, technical regulation, child safety, toys regulations, are in the future the real obstacles to trade. Now, on this, we need research. We need academic input. And unfortunately, the World Trade Organization as a body has very, very limited research capacity. You know, WTO is not a huge pentagon with thousands of people. We're a small organization. We have 750 people, which is one-third of the headcount of the OECD, for instance. So we need inputs from colleagues in the World Bank, colleagues in the IMF, colleagues in the OECD, colleagues in the FAO, and we need universities, we need academics to step in. And we have now a sort of network with a number of American, European, South Asian, Australian universities. And this, again, this two-way street is extremely important for us, not least if we want to look at the future or if we want to look precisely at how things happen. I mean, take another example, which is this big debate whether free trade agreements, bilateral agreements are coherent with multilateral systems. Well, looking precisely at whether or not firms use the preferences they get from bilateral agreements is a very important question. And the answer about the virtues, the possibilities of this coexistence are different depending on the numbers you get with a good polling inquiry, microeconomic research on this.
What can universities and researchers do then to improve their contribution to policy making, and likewise, how can the WTO encourage this?
What we're doing in the WTO is, and we've taken important steps in recent years, and we will take more steps in this direction, is disseminating trade information. We've just, for instance, decided to make public and accessible the database about tariff structures for every country, whether it's the ceiling tariff which they have committed in WTO or whether it's their applied tariff. So what we can do is provide a lot of information, but the WTO Secretariat itself is for the moment too short in terms of transforming this information availability into information intelligence. So what we need, we can provide the raw material, but what we need is intellectual added value in terms of analysis, in terms of forecasting, and that can only be done by researchers outside of the system itself.
Do you feel that the Warwick Commission added that intellectual value?
Yeah, the answer is clearly yes. And by the way, when I presented the sort of views I have on WTO in the next years, which I had to do for being elected for my second term, I rather heavily draw into the Warwick Commission findings, whether it's on the sort of relevance of WTO, whether it's on this question I already mentioned, the future obstacle to trade. So it's an important and a good contribution. And I'm very happy that that this piece is now on the table, not least because it also helps our members to make up their own mind on what their priorities are.